Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Here to talk about Black Panther from Los Angeles, California, Aaron Alvarado.
Please refer to me only as the Brown Panther from now, moving forward. Thank you. What's going on, David?
See, I was going to say that, but I just felt like it would have sounded wrong for me to.
It's actually more like the Pink Panther, if we're going to be honest.
Oh, man. The Black Panther. We saw it.
I sure did. When did you see it?
What's that?
When did you see it?
Oh, I saw it Thursday night, 8 p.m.
Okay.
Yep. Did you catch it yesterday?
I saw it Saturday, Friday night, opening night.
Sold out?
I think, no, wait. Friday night. Sold out theater.
Oh, yeah.
Tiny little theater. We looked everywhere. We couldn't find it. It was sold out everywhere, basically. Mm. So we had to go to the dirtiest, little dingiest theater in our area. And we made a wise choice because we got prime seats at 7:30.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Did you have a good crowd?
Yeah, it was pretty diverse, actually. It was, believe it or not, plenty of white folks, some black folks, a few Mexicans, myself included. But yeah, it was nice to see, like, old, young. Everyone was enjoying it.
So. Yeah. Well, it's Marvel.
Marvel is universally loved.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. Except for me, I kind of just, like, mildly tolerate it, so.
You mildly tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
What gets you, I'm curious, then, we've talked about a lot about Marvel movies. Some of these you really like, some of them you really hate, but it's you more often than not tolerate them. You liked Thor Ragnarok quite a bit.
I sure did. Love Thor. So the problem is I am a huge DC fan, and their movies are just better than the Marvel movies.
So. Oh my
gosh. I can't help it. They just make the better movies.
Yeah, clearly.
Big David Ayers fan right here.
Dude, I like David Ayers, but he's made half of his movies have been bad and half of them have been good.
A quarter have been good.
Okay. All right. I was generous.
He wrote Training Day.
What's that?
He wrote Training Day.
That's right. He was a screenwriter on
that. We just talked about that.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. He's got that cop genre pretty well nailed down. That's his kind of LAPD.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's Training Day, Bright, and End of Watch.
Yeah, that's right. I loved End of Watch. It's actually
End of Watch is really good.
Fun movie. Yeah.
Speaking of Thor Ragnarok, which you said you liked, correct me if I'm wrong, and I could be, was the director of that film, Taika Waititi, the first person of color to direct a Marvel, like major Marvel tentpole?
Off the top of my head, yes. Wait, do we count Kenneth Branagh as being a person of color? No?
No, the first color. The first Thor film does not count.
Okay. I don't know if you can actually get whiter than Kenneth Branagh.
That is the whitest because he's British and like super proper.
Oh yeah. Gosh. Can you imagine Kenneth Branagh directing a Marvel movie and it sucked? Like, let's be honest, it was a bad movie.
Ooh, some people disagree strongly with you. I will say that I think it's that the Thor franchise is in better hands with Taika Waititi than it is with Kenneth Branagh. Let alone the director of the second Thor film, of which I have no idea who that was. No, I'm not even going to look it up. Doesn't even matter. Don't care. That was such a bad movie.
Completely irrelevant. It's possibly the worst Marvel movie.
Yeah, the Thor 2, The Dark World, is possibly the worst. It's up there. Now, this is where it's going to get controversial, because you love Shane Black, but Shane Black directed Iron Man 3, which also for me is among the worst of the Marvel films.
That actually hurts to hear you say that, because Iron Man 3 is just a boatload of fun. I mean, it has a great villain.
Great child actor.
Really good child actor. Great writing.
How excited are you for a Shane Black directed Predator film?
It's the one project that I was hoping he'd do once he got out of his semi-retirement or whatever he considered his lifetime hiatus or whatever he decided to call it.
You wanted him to do a Predator film?
I wanted a Predator movie out of him. So,
wow.
I'm extremely excited for this. I think it's in very capable hands. Let's just hope he does a better job than Iron Man 3.
Okay.
Well, speaking as long as it's better than that, we're good.
Speaking of capable hands, Ryan Coogler. Ryan Coogler from Oakland, California.
Coogs, man, is what we call him.
He's my same age. He went to Sacramento State University.
He could have been a classmate with you.
Could have been a classmate. I could have very easily gone to Sacramento State. I chose instead to go to Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. I very easily could have gone to Sac State and been in film classes with Mr. Coogler, but I did not. Instead, I actually met Mr. Coogler when he premiered his first feature-length film at Sundance Film Festival several years back, a film called Fruitvale Station. We've talked about it here on this pod. You've seen Fruitvale Station. That was the beginning of his career. Ryan Coogler, of course, went on to direct Creed, and then he just directed the new Black Panther film. I want to talk about Black Panther in the context of his career, and then we can talk more specifically about the film itself, what we liked, what we didn't like, and our general thoughts. But what did you think of Coogler's ability after you first saw Fruitvale Station?
Well, Fruitvale Station, I remember you went to Sundance and you highly recommended it to me. You said it's like it was one of the best movies you
did
saw.
Did you not
Sundance
see it?
That year. I didn't see it until maybe like a year later. I didn't see it until it was on like HBO or something. But yeah, once I saw it on HBO, I was seriously impressed. Like it was a really interesting story. I love the way they handled it, and you could tell like this kid was going places. I mean, he was a kid when he directed this movie, right?
Yeah.
So what year was that? What year did that come out? 2013.
Yeah.
So I mean, he was 26 years old when he made that movie. That's pretty insane.
Yeah.
Because that's a movie that has a distinct style to it.
Mm-hmm.
It has its own narrative flares. I mean, he really had a vision for it. And I think that's one of the things as a young director that you struggle to define yourself with that vision, with that style. And he had it right away. So it's obvious like he had a future in the industry. And I think we've just seen him blossom from there. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll never forget seeing that film. I mean, the dude's from Oakland. It's a movie about Oakland, about Bart, about the unfortunate, really execution of an unarmed, young black man that got killed by a Bart police officer while he was in custody with his stomach to the ground. This horrific murder. I mean, it's a film that I feel in some weird ways connected to, because when we found out that this BART police officer was, he got kicked off of BART, he didn't end up getting, he was not guilty of manslaughter.
Right.
That announcement happened the weekend of my wedding. We were married in Oakland, California. There were major riots. Some of family on my wife's side had flown in for the wedding, and they were on lockdown in their hotel. And couldn't come out because of the riots due to, to the news that this BART police officer wasn't going to be. I mean, it was a crazy thing. This person clearly committed murder and was completely let off. But this film, it felt distinctly Oakland. Even down to the language, the words being used, I remember watching it being like, oh, this is authentic. And it was just an incredibly heartbreaking story told in it. You could tell when someone has a storyteller, like in their DNA, they know how to tell a story. And there's that, like I said, the authenticity to it. I'll never forget sitting in that theater watching that movie being like, this guy has got a future. And there was a Q&A at my screening at Sundance. The film had just won the Grand Prix or whatever, or Grand Jury, not Grand Prix.
It won the Grand Slam breakfast at Denny's. So
the moon's over Miami at Denny's. The Grand Jury Award for Best Film that year at Sundance, it won that award. And so this was the post-award-winning screening. And so Ryan Coogler was there for the screening. I'm sitting maybe the fourth or fifth row, excuse me. And he gets up after the film to take a Q&A. And I'll never forget someone in the audience making a remark, and oftentimes, and I joke about this at Sundance, oftentimes people in the Q&A don't have questions, they just have comments.
Mm-hmm.
And one person's, they at least prefaced their non-question by saying, like, this isn't a question, but I just need to tell you that this was an incredible work of art. You did such a great job. Your life is never going to be the same because of it. Your career is going to go in a place where you're going to be able to do whatever you want to do, and I can't wait to see where it goes. And he was, Coogler was visibly emotional at that comment because it was sincere and it was heartfelt. And you could feel in the room, everyone was like, oh, yeah, like we can't wait to see where you continue to take your career, because you clearly have it. You have the storyteller's talent. And you know what's been interesting is to see where he's taken that career. I talk about how he's my same age. If I had made a film like that at that age, and then, you know, I wouldn't say he had his pick of the litter for next project. He wasn't quite at that stage yet. But I think the natural progression is to do another story, a personal story, another indie film. But this dude didn't do that. He went straight for one of the most well-established franchises in cinema history. That's the Rocky franchise, which, mind you, hadn't really made a good one in about three movies.
Exactly. Three, that's generous. I mean, it's been a long time. There's maybe two good movies in the entire franchise before Creed.
Like, so Coogler had just enough clout, which really, again, wasn't that much. I mean, he had the clout of Michael B. Jordan, the subject of Fruitvale Station, who has become a star. He had the clout of you know, the fact that his meteoric rise as an actor, the fact he won a grand jury prize at Sundance, and Fruitvale Station was getting some, it never got nominated for an Academy Awards, but it was getting some love during award seasons in terms of like this indie film that really did something interesting. But whatever clout he had, he cashed all in to have a meeting with Sylvester Stallone to pitch him this story about Apollo Creed's son. And he was able to convince a reportedly skeptical Sly Stallone, who didn't want to do it, didn't want to make another film in this franchise, and convinced him to do it. He went out. He just picked one of his favorite film franchises, something that he talked about being personal to him. He used to watch these movies with his dad growing up. And he wanted to add another chapter to that story. The stones it would take to do that. The stones it would take to just go all in on that idea, which, look, there's a lot of ways that's going to go wrong. When you have someone like Sly Stallone and a studio involved, you begin to lose your ability to have creative control, which amazingly he kept.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to his vision and the fact that he is a supreme storyteller.
Yes.
And that's one of the roles that's one of the hats you have to wear as a director, is being able to sell your vision. And he obviously can do that. I mean, you want to talk about revitalizing a franchise, which is exactly what he did with Creed.
Yes.
But it's also he took an angle that they already used in the franchise, the son of a fighter.
Yeah.
I mean, they already did a movie with that. And I could see why Sylvester Stallone would be skeptical. But again, this is a guy who took the story, put his own spin on it, and he turned it into something that transcended whatever came before it, you know, other than the first one, basically. It's the second best movie in the entire franchise, yes. I'd say. Yeah, yes. Head and shoulders better than all the other ones. Again, he did it as a young filmmaker. His second film.
His second film. He's directing Sly Stallone in a film he gets nominated for an Oscar for, which, look... Right. I don't think any of us expected Sylvester Stallone to be getting nominated for any Oscars for the rest of his life. He's been making these expendable movies, literally a movie that makes at his own expense. I mean, it's just a funny action film. You know, the guy was not pumping out Oscar material. And Coogler gets in there, tells this incredible story, is able to write the script for it and have minimal changes, allegedly, and then is able to direct the heck out of Sylvester Stallone. I mean, that is incredible to be able to walk in and do that. Incredible.
And I think enough can't be said about the performance that he got out of Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan's a fine actor.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we all saw him grow up on Friday Night Lights, and we've all seen his work. And exactly. Yeah. I mean, he was a good young actor. He's a good kid actor is what he was. But in the hands of Ryan Coogler, he is an amazing actor. Like, he finds the next level. And that's that relationship that a lot of directors get with the primary star that they cast in multiple films, and this is his guy, and I think the two really feed off each other, and it's amazing to watch when it works.
Look, Michael B. Jordan is De Niro to Coogler's Scorsese. Like, that's what that's what we're at right now. Like, that's I'm talking like that powerful of a connection, and I can't wait to see where they continue to go. And you know, we're going to continue that thread when we get into, you know, Black Panther in earnest, and I have some thoughts about Michael B. Jordan's role in this film. But we see him do this incredible thing with Creed. Now the question is what does he do next? We hear reports of Disney trying to get Ava DuVernay to direct Black Panther. It looked like it was going to be a done deal. For whatever reason, those talks break down. And Ava actually continues to, she continues on a project still with Disney for A Wrinkle in Time. And they end up actually wanting Coogler to come in and direct Black Panther. Were you nervous hearing that this was going to be Coogler's next film?
Without a doubt. I'm a natural skeptic, right? Yeah. So hearing that he was going to go step into the Marvel Universe, start working for Disney, I thought this was, well, here we go. This is his first misstep. I was already assuming this was going to be his first misstep. I can safely say that I was totally wrong.
Well, to be fair, how many directors? Now, this was the news of him directing this was before we'd even seen Taika's take on Thor with Ragnarok. But before Taika, how many Marvel films had we seen that had like really took on the personality of their director or had a distinct vision? Not even Joss Whedon, who I don't think is particularly remarkable in terms of a personality. Not even those films I felt like were really that distinct or unique.
I think it's Guardians only because those characters they weren't established before.
That's true. James Gunn did have he was able to have some creative control there. That's true.
Right, and that was like one of the concerns that I had. You're playing in Marvel's sandbox. You are so limited to what you can and can't do that this is why I figured he's just going to make another template cookie cutter superhero, like more specifically a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, those are my concerns when I first heard that he was attached to this thing.
So we see that it has a 98% Rotten Tomatoes when it first gets certified. I think it still is there. I haven't looked up today.
It's high 90s. I don't know exactly what it is, but.
So that comes, enormous expectations going in. I can tell you for me, I came out of the film pretty thrilled. I thought this was incredible film. I've jotted down a handful of notes and things of why I loved it so much. I'll start here. This is a film that felt like it didn't have to exist in the Marvel Universe. We have a character that is part of the Marvel Universe, Black Panther, yes. But I loved so much that we didn't have this obligatory Tony Stark cameo where he just drops in to save the day or to impart wisdom or some sort of like quippy line that is like Tony Stark-esque. No Tony Stark, no Captain America, no Black Widow. None of these characters that pop in. The only characters that we see from other films are these very, very side minor roles. In the case of Andy Serkis and Martin Freeman, and their roles are very much related to the story because they were in the last film that we were introduced to Black Panther, which was Civil War. But beyond that, like, this is a film that, while existed in the Marvel Universe, felt like something entirely on its own. And it was a film that was contained within its own. It didn't have to happen necessarily in this part of like the timeline. It really could have happened at any point. And I loved that autonomy. Like, I loved he was able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's where it really shines for me. Specifically, they talked about, they asked Ryan Coogler why. Do we want to spoil stuff? Like, I don't know if we should or shouldn't. But I'll just say they asked Ryan Coogler why there wasn't a specific connection to the other Marvel movies that are happening at this moment.
Yes.
And he flat out said, it just doesn't need to happen. We already have something else that also carries weight, and we didn't need that connection, that specific connection to something else that's happening at this very moment with the other Marvel movies. So this is Ryan Coogler exerting his own vision onto the story, imprinting it with his own trademark, his own style. And the movie is better for it. Like you said, it's standalone. It does not need to exist. There's no connection to Iron Man or Spider-Man or any of these other characters.
Yeah.
And again, it feels freer because some of those things feel like they're tying a movie down. Like, I specifically felt that way when I watched Spider-Man Homecoming. I felt like this movie is tethered to all the other movies.
Yeah.
For its, you know, for good or for better or worse, it's connected to them. This movie never feels like it's held back by the other stuff, and which I appreciate it for that. So
no, totally, 100% agree. I've been so conditioned to having it be tethered and tied in. Like, that's just the whole thing of the cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. It's why people want to create these cinematic universes, is to have them be tethered. I love that it wasn't. It was so much better because of it. Another reason why this film was so great, other than Coogler being a terrific storyteller, a terrific director, and we'll get into the storytelling in just a bit, this may have had the very best supporting cast of any of the Marvel films I've seen. I think it is. I think it has the best supporting cast of any of the Marvel films.
There's the best performances from the supporting cast by far.
Oh yeah.
It's not even close, really. Like, you have some A-plus performances.
Oh, yeah.
That have very small parts.
Who's your MVP, then? Yeah.
Man, initially I thought Daniel was a Kaluuya. How do you say his last
name? Yeah, Kaluuya.
Yeah, Kaluuya.
I'm sure I'm butchering that.
He was my MVP.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Lupita Nyong'o.
She's great.
Incredible.
She's incredible
in her role. I mean, she has a really big part, actually. But she is kind of like the foil to Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa character, however you say it.
Yes.
But, you know, she's like the ex-love interest, and she's really, really good in this movie. But there's like five or six A-plus performances beyond the two main characters, so it's really interesting.
Oh, yeah, for me, it's... I mean, you've got even Forrest Whitaker, who comes in a small bit part and just nails it. You've got... for me, it's... I mean, it starts and ends with, I was going to say Angela Bassett, who's terrific. No, it starts and ends with Michael B. Jordan, who is so good in this movie that there was moments where I'm like, oh, do I kind of wish he was Black Panther and not Chadwick? I mean, like, it almost was that good. Like, it may have been that good.
We can say that Michael B. Jordan is probably the best villain in Marvel cinematic history.
Oh, yes, yes.
He is so freaking good in this. It's amazing.
Well, it's good because it's not just like it's a bad guy that has real motivations that you're like, when it really is kind of revealed what's pushing him, what's motivating him to try and do what he does. I'm trying not to be spoilery. And, you know, Black Panther's realization of like, this is a monster of their own making is really powerful storytelling stuff. It took an angle that was like totally believable, felt fresh, also felt topical. Was able to tie in themes that are both like, you know, present as well as kind of everlasting. Michael B. Jordan has a line at the end of the film that is really just heartbreaking and just is cuts to the core, but makes the story all the more powerful because of it. The dialogue is incredible, and the dialogue he delivers especially is incredible.
Right, and I think one of the things that really shines in this is how complicated the relationship he has with the main character, the Black Panther.
Yeah.
King T'Challa.
Yeah.
It is a complicated relationship, and it's not just one where it's black and white, good versus evil.
Right.
Because some of the things that Michael B. Jordan is fighting for it's good. Like, he
it's
has
kind
a
of
good
justified.
Vision.
Yeah.
he has possibly the best motives of anyone in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, if we're going to be honest.
Yeah.
But again, you know, that just adds to the depth of the characters, and that speaks to the writing. Again, Ryan Coogler, he co-wrote the screenplay.
I
mean, I don't think we can praise Coogler enough, because this is his vision, this is his baby, and if he didn't direct this movie, there is no possible way it would be as good as it is.
No way. So. This material in the hands of a lesser person or anyone else. It's just not this good. It's just not.
I mean, it's so much fun on top of all this other stuff.
Yeah.
It's a really fun movie.
Yeah, it is.
It can be heavy at times.
The Korean casino scene.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great action sequence. It's towards the beginning of the film. You get this great action sequence that turns into a car chase. All of that is exhilarating stuff. It's really, really fun. The whole vibranium concept and how that powers the technology, you know, it works in a somewhat real kind of scientific way. Like, okay, this isn't just like a magic black box.
It ticks a lot of boxes. It has like the James Bond stuff, the Iron Man tech stuff, which is fun. Like, that stuff's fun. And you know, my concern going into this really was, is this going to be a serious movie? Is this going to be like funny movie? Like, what is the tone of it basically?
Yeah.
And you get about, you know, the first half an hour or so, it's pretty serious. Like, it's a dramatic start to the movie. And I was a little concerned, like, is this going to be the tone for the whole thing? But once they kind of get into Wakanda, you understand, like, there's people that break up that seriousness. Specifically, the character of the king's sister. I can't think of her name in the movie, but she plays the princess. She's really funny. She's, like, also the tech guru.
She's, like, the Q.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly her character. She's really funny. She's she has great one-liners.
Yes.
Yeah, so I love the way that they mix that, like the dramatic and the comedic. So
yeah. No, really I was going to mention her. I didn't know the actress's name, but I was going to mention her as also one of the side, or, you know, supporting, not side, but supporting roles that was, like, really great. As well as the tech of, like, being able to pilot stuff remotely.
The VR stuff?
Yeah. Which wasn't that far from reality.
Right.
I just thought it was, like, really fun way of, you know, showcasing that tech.
Totally. So it was Princess Shuri is her name. Mm-hmm. And the actress's name is Letitia Wright.
Ah, Letitia Wright. Yeah. Okay, great.
She was great. She's very good. She was really good in this.
Yeah. No, she was a blast. So I don't want to jump yet into criticisms per se, but did you have any issues with the film?
So my issue is like the first, I would say the first third of the movie is it's kind of plotting and it's a little heavy for me, a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
But again, like saying that, it's not bad. Like it's not bad at all. Like it's very tolerable, and you kind of need the slow burn, the slow buildup of that, the dramatic, because the rest of the movie is just like once they get to Wakanda, it's basically just breakneck pacing. Like it's all action sequences and stuff happens like basically every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Whether it's, there's a lot of fight sequences, a lot of, like you said, there's a car chase. There's a battle sequence towards the end, which is really interesting. I say the movie starts a little slow for my liking.
So,
and it feels a little bit long, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I was going to agree with you, though. Because my issue was the length, 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
For the beginning being as slow as it was, you know, speeding that up could have helped the fact that it also felt too long.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's some stuff that you could definitely cut out of there. But there's also stuff like, I don't know if we talked about this yet, but there's certain aspects of Michael B. Jordan's characters that I would have wished were expanded.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to see more out of.
Yeah.
I think some of the things that he did.
Totally.
Because we get introduced to him early on in the film. Like he's in the first like 10 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just goes away for like 45 minutes or so.
He does.
And I kind of wish, like, okay, what happened to Michael? What happened to, what was his character's name?
Well, Killmonger is the...
Killmonger, that's right, Killmonger. What happened to Killmonger?
Yeah.
But then we see him later on. And stuff,
again, without getting the spoilers and whatnot, I would say, like, the peak of his powers or, like, the climax of that, of his character, felt short-lived.
Yeah, I would agree to that.
And I wish either extending that portion or giving us a little bit more earlier on, like you said, it really was 45 minutes to an hour of him not on screen.
Yeah, he just goes away.
Just goes away.
He gets a really cool intro.
Yep.
Like, I love his introduction.
Cool, very cool intro. Yep.
That was a really great scene. And then he just kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer because he shines every time he's on the screen,
obviously. He's so good. He's so dang good.
This is the first time I've heard him in interviews talk about this is the first time he's ever played a villain or a bad guy in a movie, and I think he took to it very, very well.
Did. And really, I mean, he is the bad guy, he is the villain for all intents and purposes, but I've got to imagine it's a little bit easier to play that role when you have the motivations that his character has.
Absolutely.
It's not all that crazy to wrap your head around those motivations, and it's very easy to talk yourself into them and how justified they are. The themes of this film are really fascinating too, because there is an element of it that I think like different political ideologies could attach themselves to elements of this and identify with
easily.
It. I think,
without a doubt.
By the end of the film, I think it's clear what the message is. But this idea of Wakanda not sharing its tech, Wakanda being very isolationist, not accepting refugees, and thriving in some ways, right? Not thriving in other ways, but thriving in some ways with that philosophy. I that was an interesting angle when I was watching it, thinking, wow, certain philosophies could point to this as an example of why that's the right way to do things.
Right.
Do you feel like that was resolved by the end of the film?
I think it was, and actually I think it's right away they introduced the fact that that's probably the wrong approach, because you see Lupita Nyong'o's character,
a spy.
Or Nyong'o, Nakaya, I think her name is. She says, I don't want to go back to Wakanda because we're not helping anybody. I need to stay out here and help people. Like, the way she's introduced is she's helping these women that are being trafficked or of some sort, or kidnapped or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's, so she's flat out says, like, we're not doing enough to help the world, so I don't want to be here. This is not where I belong. I belong out in the world helping people. So.
Yeah.
So they do approach this perspective of, you know,
but she's Wakanda alone
first.
She's alone in that thought. Like, everyone else at Wakanda, everyone else disagrees, including King T'Challa.
They do. And it, like you said, there's people that share that perspective that
yeah, they do.
Probably look at this movie as a template for what could possibly be.
I will say this.
We camouflage ourselves in the rest of the world.
I don't frequent this website, to be clear, but the website Breitbart did a film review with a headline that I feel like takes all the wrong parts of this film and kind of shoehorns it into their own philosophy or ideology, which I saw thinking, I wondered if this would happen. But then you'd have to completely throw away the last quarter of the film, which I think does a good job of kind of showing why Wakanda's way had been incorrect and why King T'Challa realized that. And he does at the very end, you know, he starts this outreach center. Is, again, not being too spoilery, that I feel like is the beginning of what could be like a greater expansion of sharing that knowledge and tech.
Right, and I think that's the whole point of, like, his, that's going to be the tenure of his reign. Like, that's going to be the signature of, you know, his vision for Wakanda is to not be hidden to the world and instead do what they can, do what Wakanda can to share, you know, their technology and resources, basically, for the greater good.
Yeah.
And it's like... And I, like you said, that's a message that really resonates today for more than a number of reasons. But I just think that, like, it feels like a timeless approach to storytelling, but it also feels very modern as well. So I don't know how it's going to age. I don't think that this movie is going to have the impact that it would in like 15 years, probably.
Maybe not. But I can't help but feel like... I don't know. We might be surprised how it...
Probably.
Yeah.
But it's the perfect movie for this time.
It's perfect for this time. But I felt like it was done in a way that's going to resonate beyond just this time. Because there are films you see that are really, truly made for today that are good today, but you think, oh, yeah, 5 years, 10 years, certainly 20 years, this is just not going to have the same impact. But I felt like Coogler was able to do it in a way that's like, okay, the message of this, I feel like, still will go beyond just... You know, the kind of
2018. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
The political discourse being had right now. I mean, right, I think a lot of the issues that he's getting at are bigger than just just this period of time. So,
yeah, totally. And I think that writing that script had to be so fulfilling. I'd imagine.
Oh yeah.
Because he's getting to tackle all of these,
like, how many
poignant topics.
How many notes do you think he got from the Marvel execs asking him to tone stuff down?
I wonder. I really do wonder.
Really, though.
And it's funny. Like, I don't want Coogler to make another Marvel movie because I think he's got such a bright future. I want to see how high it can go. But if we were to get a prequel of the Killmonger...
Oh, my god!
The
gosh.
Killmonger standalone movie, how much fun would that be?
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love it. Yeah.
I mean, because, like, just to quickly talk about his backstory, like, they talk about it in the movie.
Yeah.
He was a Navy SEAL. Yep. He, you know, he grew up on the streets, basically.
And, he's an Oakland Athletics fan, as shown in the flashback. Right. Love that retro athletics gear, which I had as a kid in the early 90s.
Yeah, so he had a very interesting backstory. Yeah. And I wonder, I'd love to see how his internal politics evolved from the time he was a kid to when he was a full-grown man.
Absolutely.
Challenging the throne.
Yeah. Well, and then realizing his, you know... Anyway, I was going to go into spoiler, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But I agree. I'm all in on a Killmonger prequel. And obviously, I want that Coogler directed. But since that likely won't happen, I do want to ask you about Coogler. Is there a current director, maybe one of the ones on your Mount Rushmore, that you would most want Coogler's career to be patterned after? Like, do you want him to be a Scorsese who's making unique stuff? I mean, Scorsese is making stuff that's adapted, you know, from books, other things. Do you want Coogler to continue to do what he's doing, which is jumping into these, what we feel like are well-worn and probably kind of creatively empty franchises, and then revitalizing them? Because he's two for two in that department. Right. Do you want it to look like?
I think that the path has been laid out for him to be, you know, to fall in a Spike Lee type of role, because he's making Spike Lee in the beginning of his career, he made extremely personal films that talked about the black struggle, because that's, you know, he's a black man living in America, specifically New York.
Yep.
And this, like, that was the tone for all of his movies. And then he kind of, like, you know, he started to branch out and they weren't as successful. But I think Coogler has the ability and possibly the potential to surpass someone like Spike Lee, who I think Spike Lee is one of my favorite directors of all time. I think he's an amazing storyteller. And I'd love to see Coogler take that same approach where he continues to make these personal films while taking risks. Yeah. Like, I mean, Spike Lee would never make a Marvel movie like this, obviously.
Yeah.
Whereas Coogler, he's already shown that he's 31 years old and he's made possibly the best Marvel movie that they've ever made. So his talent level and his potential is limitless. But I'd love to see him continue to make these personal movies that talk about, you know, him, that resonate with his upbringing, and they continue to show his perspective on life, because I think he has an incredibly important perspective that needs to be told in mainstream cinema. So
absolutely
just agree. keep doing what speaks his truth, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like Coogler sat down and charted this path where he wrote down, okay, I'm gonna make an indie movie first that's gonna win the grand jury prize at Sundance. Then I'm gonna move on and make a Rocky movie, which is on the bucket list. And then I'm gonna jump into the Marvel Cinematic Universe and make something truly unique in a place that's not very easy to make a unique movie. There's no way that was his path. He's clearly following his heart. There's no doubt this guy is getting, I mean, he's getting mailed thousands of scripts. There's gotta be stacks and stacks and stacks of scripts. I'm imagining none are in digital form. They're all printed out. but especially at this point in his career, he really does have his pick of the litter. He could really make whatever he wanted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, starting tomorrow, I mean, this is the opening weekend. So tomorrow, he now has the key to Hollywood. He can make any movie that he wants.
Oh, how many meetings has he already had with Kathleen Kennedy, by the way?
Oh, sure. I mean,
she's been meeting with him for a while now. Whether or not he ever does a Star Wars film is another question. But they have had meetings, my friend. They have had meetings.
Of course. I mean, Star Wars is a franchise that has been screaming for a vision that is non-white.
Yeah.
That's what we need. We need someone that's directing a movie from a perspective that isn't just the typical, sorry to say it, but just the white angle perspective. Sure. So Coogler, why not? Like, so here's the problem. I don't want to call Ryan Coogler a black director, because he's not. He is a director that happens to be black.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that's part of his character, that's part of his upbringing, and it's, to call someone like a black director, I think, is really limiting, and I don't think that it's fair. He's one of the most talented directors currently working in Hollywood, who has a unique upbringing, and I think that Hollywood owes it to him and his perspective to give him the opportunity to make whatever he wants. So if that's a Star Wars movie, great. If that's, you know, his own franchise that comes out of his own head, even better.
Yeah.
Let's see what he can do. So
do we know what he's doing next? Is there been an announcement?
There's been an announcement. I don't know what the let me pull up his IMDb real quick. Okay. So he has one thing announced. It's called Wrong Answer.
Okay.
And it's the story, he's directing it. It's the story of a math teacher in Atlanta that is scandalized when he looks to get funding for a school by altering his students' test scores.
Ah.
So.
Okay.
And it's directed by Ryan Coogler, starring Michael B. Jordan, and Ta-Nehisi Coates is actually one of the screenplay writers.
No kidding.
So, yes, exactly.
Has he written a film before?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. So, yeah, this will be his first screenplay.
Interesting.
And, that'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, well, Coogler quickly he's become one of my very favorite working directors.
Very exciting, actually, to see one of these guys come out and develop. And it's, you know, it's kind of like watching a sports prospect flourish, basically.
Yeah.
We saw him get drafted when he made Fruitvale.
Yep.
He was a first-round draft pick.
I saw him win Rookie of the Year with Fruitvale Station.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then he made AAA when he made the Creed movie.
Yeah.
And now he's in the All-Star game.
Now he's in the All-Star game.
Black Panther.
So. Yeah. Now he's a perennial All-Star for sure.
Again,
going back to my very first experience seeing him stand on stage at Sundance Film Festival, emotional, and during the Q&A, as someone suggests that his life will never be the same and they can't wait to see where his career goes and what films he chooses to make. And now we are two more films later, and I just don't think it could have gotten... I don't think it could have gone better for him. I think he's done just... he's just done a remarkable job making personal but incredibly entertaining films. That's the thing. Like, we talk about movies and we talk about, you know, he's great at telling these stories, but it's just entertaining stuff. Creed and Black Panther were wildly entertaining films, and they had great messages and great performances, and the dude just... Right. I just want him to keep going, man. Just whatever he feels passionate about, just keep going.
And at the end of the day, this movie, Black Panther, which made over $200 million this opening weekend, does not have... You don't make $200 million unless the movie is incredibly entertaining. And that's what he made. Like, exactly. This is his vision. He co-wrote the screenplay. He directed it, and it made $200 million because of his vision. So this is a very exciting time for him. Very exciting. For the Marvel franchise, the universe, this just breathes some life into it. You know, so I think you as a Marvel fan should be excited.
Makes me wonder, though. You say I should be excited, but I see Black Panther in these trailers for this next Avengers film coming out in a few months, Infinity War. And I can't tell you how unexcited I am to see Chadwick Boseman directed as Black Panther by someone who's not Ryan Coogler. I'm not excited. Right. I'm really not.
So when is the next big Marvel movie?
When is Infinity's, Infinity?
Yeah.
Yeah, Infinity War. I was going to say Infinity Stones. Let's see. The release date is... I thought it was in May. Yeah, it's May 4th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so May 4th, that's coming. I mean, it's right around the corner.
That's right around the corner. Also in May, the next Star Wars film, which is...
Which one's going to make more money, in your opinion?
Ooh, what a good question.
Yeah.
Worldwide or domestic? Because that's...
Domestic is all I care about. I'm a Wakandan when it comes to American box office. I only care about what happens inside the borders.
I think worldwide, it's Infinity War. I think domestic, it's going to be Solo.
Really, you think?
I don't know, though, man, because Solo looks terrible.
I will tell you, we had the Solo trailer before our movie, before Black Panther.
Yeah.
And the audience reaction... Nothing.
Well, like, this is the dude.
Zero reaction to it.
It comes on, and I realize, like, oh, this is the first time seeing the Solo trailer on the big screen for me. And I'm watching. Of course, we did a whole pod on this. I thought the trailer was awful. I think the movie looks truly bad. And seeing on the big screen, amazingly, I've never had this experience before. It looked worse. It looked worse on the big screen.
100% agree with you. Gosh, I couldn't believe it.
My mom leans over to me. And she said, there's another Star Wars movie coming out, like, in May? I said, yeah. And she goes, and that's Han Solo? And I lean back over and I say, no, Mom, that's not Han Solo. That's not my Han Solo.
I could not believe how poorly it played in that
theater. It looks terrible. Oh, Aaron, what is going on?
I don't know.
They just should have. I realized that they were 3 weeks away from finishing production when they fired the directors, but you can the film. You pay the people, you cut your $150 million loss, you move on, but you protect the integrity of this franchise. You know how I feel about The Last Jedi. I think it's a masterpiece. So but up to this point, they've maintained their integrity. This is going to be bad.
So here's the problem, right? So you have a movie, Han Solo, that looks awful. Everyone understands it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's coming out in May, you said, this year?
Yeah.
When's the next Star Wars movie come out after that?
A year from December.
There you go. So now, So now you have what,
18 months of that bad taste in your mouth from Star Wars.
Awful.
Not great, really bad, Aaron. Planning. Not great. Yeah.
So yeah, that is a huge problem. This movie stinks, which it definitely is going to stink.
Oh my gosh. So. I wanted to thank Michael Hyland, who just commented on the Facebook Live feed with what has just become a trending hashtag, I noticed, on Twitter worldwide, if you look it up. Hashtag not my Han. Also want to shout out to Chris Barber, who wrote, love Michael Jordan. And I guess in honor of today's All-Star game in the NBA, I also want to say I love Michael Jordan. One of the, probably the greatest of all time. He's the GOAT. Him or Bill Russell. Nate Burrell asking, is there any chance that Solo can be good? Nate, we don't want to be the bearer of bad news here, but there is no chance.
Never tell him the chances. No, never tell me the what odds. Was the misquote
this
that
is
Ron Howard
worst. Said? This is the thing that really drives me crazy. I texted this to you, but there was this story with Ron Howard, the new director of the Han Solo film, quoting someone was talking to him, and I don't remember the full context, but basically Ron Howard wanted, his response was meant to be the line, Han Solo's famous line to C-3PO is, never tell me the odds. Never tell me the odds. And Ron Howard in this article wrote, what is the line that Han used to say? Never tell me the chances. Never tell me the probability. And I'm reading that being like, dude, you are the director of a Han Solo movie. You cannot afford to butcher the quote, man. You can't do Incredible. That. Where I'm supposed to believe Incredible. That you like eat, sleep, and breathe this character. You're directing him. You don't even know one of those iconic quotes. Gosh.
Are we sure that he's seen every Star Wars movie?
No. We are not sure. I don't think Ron Howard has seen most of the Star Wars movies. I don't know. Wow. When he agreed to do this, I'm not sure that he realized the difference between Han Solo and Indiana Jones. I think he knew that this was a Harrison Ford character. I think he knew that much.
Is there a chance that he thought he was directing the new Blade Runner?
Oh my, yes. Yes.
That's a real possibility.
There's a great chance that he thought that. Gosh, this is crazy. People, you got to understand. The Lucasfilm fired two innovative directors. Funny, right now in the peak of their career, directors, they fired them and brought in a man who hasn't made a good movie in a decade and a half, since Willow, probably. Like, this man hasn't made a good movie in a very long time. We can't expect this
Apollo
film
13
to be good.
Is probably, Apollo 13 is his best.
Apollo 13 is better. But look, yeah. You don't bring in someone to salvage a project like this that hasn't made a movie, a good movie, in over a decade. You just don't. Michael Hyland asking, C-3PO is the blue robot, right? Yes, he is. C-3PO is the blue one. Yes. My goodness.
Oh. He has just as good a grasp on Star Wars as Ron Howard does.
Yeah, Michael. So. Michael could have come in and salvaged it just as well. Just as well as Ron Howard. Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
I'm so fired up right now. I'm so mad they're releasing this movie. No wonder they held the trailer for so long. They didn't want people to know. Why would you?
I mean, now it makes sense why they're releasing it, because they couldn't wait even long.
They
couldn't
waited
wait
as bad
two
as,
full
yeah.
years.
If you waited past until, the Super Bowl, then you've got a crisis. I mean, it's already
well,
a
I'm
crisis.
Saying,
but.
Yeah, you're totally right about that. But I'm saying now we know why they couldn't just shelve the movie, because it would be 2 years between Star Wars.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Yeah, that's true. That's true. They but you know what? Though people talk about the Star Wars fatigue. And if we're concerned about Star Wars fatigue, Maybe it's okay to let 2 years pass. Maybe that's okay. Maybe that's okay.
Gosh, man. I think we need a break from Star Wars, personally.
Well,
I think you definitely need a Star Wars break. You've
well,
seen
I am getting
the
a break.
Jedi
I am getting
times.
A break from Star Wars, because Solo is not going to be a Star Wars movie. It's not going to be good. It's not a Star Wars movie. It's going to be look. I'm going to look at it like a bad piece of fanfic is what I'm going to look at, and I'm going to watch it. And I'm going to be like, okay, it's not a Star Wars movie. Moving on. Moving
this
on.
This is one of those. This is one of those fan-made YouTube trailers or semi-movies.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of Star Wars fanfic short film ideas, and maybe that's what I'll do during this time, during the two-year break. Is that'll let
oh,
my
yeah,
whistle.
Yeah, that's. Hey, you can release your own anthology of Star Wars.
Yeah,
stuff.
No kidding. You'd be. By the way, you'd make a better Han Solo than.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I'd deliver the lines better, more believable. What's his first line in the trailer?
His first line is
I've been something since I was 7 years old or something.
Yeah, since he was 10 years old he's been something on the streets. I don't know. It's
terrible.
got kicked out of the academy for having a mind of my own. It's like, okay, all right, dude. Not what
As
Han
the
sounds
rock
like.
Music is playing in the background. Amazing that they use rock music in a Star Wars trailer.
Incredible.
Mind-blowing.
I mean, look, at this point, all of those people involved in that production are basically like, why not? Why not? Rock music, throw it in there. Why not?
Well, they used that hero song from Spider-Man 1.
The Nickelback song? a hero can save us. Oh my gosh.
Oh,
it's hard to make good movies. Okay. It is. A lot of things, there's a lot of variables and just a handful of things have got to go wrong to really derail these films. We learned that through the example of all the bad movies that have ever been made. Anyone who's ever watched Project Greenlight on HBO knows this. Any number of things can derail a film. I don't expect all the Star Wars films to be excellent. I really don't. I understand that some will be bad. But so far, they've managed to make good stuff. And you know what? We have our first bad one. It is what it is. I'm just ready to move on.
I mean, you just gotta accept it. Now,
Can't wait for Coogler or David Lowery, friend of the pod,
exactly,
to direct. By the way, David Lowery is making a Star Wars film. That's director of Pete's Dragon, A Ghost Story, Anthem Body Sands. He's making a Star Wars film. And I cannot wait for us to be able to brag to the fact that we had a Star Wars director on the pod in an interview.
An exclusive interview.
An exclusive interview. Absolutely.
Just looking at, like, just to wrap up my thoughts on Black Panther,
yes.
Amazing film.
Yes.
Go see it. Go see it in the theater. It's an experience that needs to be, it's something that needs to be experienced in the theater on the biggest screen possible,
Agreed.
Loud as possible. You will love it. You will have a good time. And if you don't, just let me know and I will let you use my movie pass for any other movie that you want to see.
That's right. So that's our money back guarantee on the pod. Or our movie 100%. Pass guarantee.
Yeah. Is movie pass guarantee.
We recommend wholeheartedly a film on this podcast. You go see, you don't like it. We give you the password to our movie pass account for your next film because it's on us.
That's right.
And I'm gonna echo your sentiments.
Unless I've already used the movie pass for that day. Ooh. And then you can use it some other day because we're only allowed one a day.
That's true. That's true. That is the catch here. I use it every day. I use it every day. One last comment here from Michael Hanlon. He is hoping that the trailer is wrong on this one, meaning the Solo. And then he hashtags Warrior, the 2010 film starring Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy, which was a great film and a great trailer. Not sure why he used that hashtag. not sure why. Great movie, though.
Maybe he meant Star Warrior.
Oh, Star Warriors.
Star Wars.
Oh, it could have been.
Star,
yeah, that could have been.
Golden State Warriors.
Could you imagine a Star Wars MMA film? Because I can't.
I'd love to see it. I'd pay good money to see it. I'm hoping there's an MMA scene in Solo.
You know what I want to see as a Star Wars standalone? I want to see a small little dramatic picture. I want to see the bartender at the canteen in Mos Eisley, a movie about him and his relationship with his estranged daughter. That he only gets to see on weekends and who doesn't love him, but he works really hard to get her to love him and be a good father for her. I want to see that movie.
It's beautiful. That's a great idea. I'd actually like to see a space version of Almost Famous starring the band from the cantina scene.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
You know, like the elephant playing the flute thing.
Oh, yeah,
whatever
yeah.
That is.
Bum, 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 bum,
yes, exactly. Bum, yeah. And I think there's like an Almost Famous thing that you can do with that band.
That is a good one. That's a good one. I like
that. Give me that movie. I want to see it.
Dude. Oh, my gosh. Imagine
these
if you
these are all better ideas than Han Solo.
If they invited us into the Brain Trust, if they invited us into the Lucasfilm Story Group, you and I would be able to give them so much material.
Yeah. So there's one of the things that I've been watching between movies here, because there's not a lot of movies going on, I've been catching up on my Netflix.
Oh.
And there's a series that Skylar has been recommending.
Yes.
A series called Love.
I have not seen it.
Netflix original. It's the third season is about to drop next month, so you have time to catch up.
But by the way, I've literally never even seen Netflix recommend this to me. I don't know where to find it.
I was searching for it. It was it's really bad. They don't promote it well.
It's a bad name. Just Love.
Yeah, it's pretty sparse.
Okay.
But the reason I bring it up is because throughout the series, the main character, he works on set. He's a set tutor, and but his dream is to write screenplays. And so his goal is to write a screenplay for this TV show that he's on. And in the second season, he meets the director of this movie that he's working on as a tutor. And he inadvertently pitches this idea for an action movie set on the North Pole. And it sounds amazing. And I'm thinking, just based off of that show, like if we get in the ear of someone like David Lowery, we could pitch this. We could pitch our Han Solo movie, our alternative to Han Solo movie.
Oh, sure.
Our Almost Famous, our bartender movie, like you were saying.
Well, we've got Lowery's email. If Lowery gets a Star Wars film. Make no mistake, we are sending him a doc with all of our ideas that he is free to take.
You know, it's a constant stream. I just saw someone posted on Instagram a video of a guy that he sent something like 100 text messages in a row of this girl they just met like the night before. And this is what, like, this is the example that I'm going to use when I get Lowry's number. So just 100 straight texts,
just ideas,
blocks of texts, lots of emojis. yeah. Just memes, constant memes.
GIFs, anything. A lot of lightsaber GIFs.
A ton of GIFs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just all my stuff. Going straight to his inbox, to his text messages, even better.
Oh, absolutely. Not even his box, to his phone. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just going to blow it up. I am going to blow his phone up.
Well, I don't know whose number we had when we did the phone call with him. If it's not his and it's his publicist's, rest in peace to your publicist text message inbox.
If that publicist was smart, she gave him a burner number. Yeah. So that was a 7-Eleven phone we were calling.
yeah, there's no way that was his personal cell.
No, he gets 10 text messages a month on that cell phone. That's his plan.
Well... We're right about
text messages cost like 10 cents each.
Yeah, that's right.
To send or receive.
You go over send or receive.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible times. I was so proud of how easily I could text using T9 with the phone in my pocket. Because I'd work at the movie theater. I'd be at the box office and my hand would be in my pocket. And I was cruising. I was texting so fast in my pocket. And I knew, I knew that I'd nailed it. I knew that I got it right. I didn't even have to double check.
No. You just knew. I mean, you knew the exact sequence. Yeah. That was an interesting time.
It was an interesting time. But I also knew I had to stay under my 250. Because if I got over the 250 cent I received, then we're talking 10 cents a text message. If I were to count how many text messages I send on a regular basis now on iMessage.
Oh, now?
Oh, ooh, dude.
Thousands.
My bill would be steep.
I mean, in our group chat, we have hundreds a day. Like,
we have hundreds. In our brave little group chat, we have hundreds a day.
I mean, at some point, we're going to release the memo. And by the memo, I mean the entire
transcript. Well, it's mostly you and I ganging up against Skylar, who is an ardent Second Amendment supporter.
The goal is to back him into a corner and then use his logic against him, which is like, that's the ultimate goal.
My favorite thing about iMessage, and it's easily the most frustrating and most condescending thing when it's against you, is when someone's arguing with you and the other person, the third or fourth people, they're not actually responding. They're just only liking the opposing person's text messages. They give the thumbs up or the heart, and you're like, don't agree with them. Don't agree with them.
It's amazing. This is why we need to release the memo. I mean, the transcript.
Oh, man. Release the memo. Oh, man.
Release the brave little transcript. I actually deleted the thread once, and I was so, like, I was heartbroken.
Oh.
I was like, no.
Well, because it's a historical document that is like, oh, there's so much good material in there.
Right. And then plus, I like to search the old ones and then just use that stuff against you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Because
oh,
if you're never, like, if you're not consistent with your perspective, your point of view.
Oh, well, Skylar tries to call me out sometimes. He'd be like, that's not what you said last week. And I'm like, find the receipts, my friend. Find the receipts. And by the way, iMessage has a terrible search. Like, it's not
the worst.
Great.
Possibly the worst.
So he has to go through trying to find what and how I worded it exactly, because you have to type it in exactly. You know, like how I contradict myself, and it's just not worth it. It's not worth the trouble.
Oh, man.
All right. We're at an hour, so let's wrap this up. Like you said, Black Panther's absolutely worth seeing in theaters on the big screen. Pay full price. This is one of those movies that's worth it. If you didn't like it, let us know. We'll let you log into our MoviePass accounts. If anyone who knows how MoviePass works, you'll know that actually is not helpful at all. But but seriously, go see Black Panther. Go support Ryan Coogler and his vision. Great film. Really, really fun. Incredible storytelling and the message that he really is trying to send through this film. And anything else from you, Aaron?
No, that's it. Support cinema. Go out. You know what? Sign up for MoviePass. They just got their 2 millionth member.
Yes.
They just released a brand new version of the app. The app now is gorgeous. It's amazing. Really cool to use.
It's great. So yes. The update was fantastic.
And MoviePass, $10 a month. You will use it.
Every day. Unless you got kids and it's hard to get to the theaters, which is totally understandable, it's absolutely worth it. I will say our final comment on our way out here is you and I are both wearing Kings hats, which is terrific. Sacramento and LA.
By the way. Two championships, zero.
One in 2002, regular season, best regular season record in 2002. And Pacific Division title.
You know what's funny about... did you guys hang a banner for that Pacific Division
title? Oh, absolutely we did.
Okay. I mean, I'd love to criticize that, but we've never won our division.
No,
you... So the LA Kings have been around since 1967. They never have won their division. So we have two cup banners. We have zero division banners. It's insane.
That's great.
I don't know how to explain it, but yeah. We've never won our division.
Unbelievable.
How does that happen?
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. The folks who know, we sign off this way. As we say, hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.